John Glenn left Cape Canaveral about 47 minutes ago. He went into orbit about 5 minutes after that, and that means that with an orbital flight of 89 minutes, he has gone approximately halfway around the world. He's still over the Indian Ocean at the moment, heading for Australia, and the first tracking station to pick him up in Australia will be the site at Mushay. This is located on the western coast, the southwestern coast of the Australian subcontinent. This will receive the acquisition of the spacecraft. The acquisition is what they call when it comes within their purview, and will track the spacecraft by radar and will feed telemeter data to the Mercury Control Center via the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. And it will also maintain voice communications with the spacecraft. We have no word yet on whether Colonel Glenn was actually able to see those flares that the Indian Ocean ship hoped to fire when he came within range. Perhaps Colonel Powers, the Project Mercury spokesman, will have something about that in a short while. As Colonel Powers told us, everything at the moment appears to be going beautifully. Colonel Glenn reports by voice that he's in excellent condition. He had no trouble withstanding the force of 8 G's of gravity as he went up toward orbit. He's now in a weightless condition. He's been eating, and presumably he is still in fine shape. Almost halfway around the world, 3 points in Australia form a triangle. That triangle we were talking about, a complex that plays a part in the worldwide tracking operations. Those points are Perth, Mushay, and Woomera. James Satterfield talked to correspondent Dick Bate about them.
The equipment at this station provides radar tracking, command control, radio, and telemetry reception.
When you say command control, now that station can order the capsule or the spacecraft to do certain things.
That's correct.
Re-enter, for example.
It can order to do that, or it can change the satellite clock to change the point at which it begins to re-enter off the United States.
All of the stations on the net don't have this capability.
That's correct. There are 7 stations which do have this capability.
How many men work this station here at Perth?
Here at Mushay, we have about 45 people operating the station full-time, in addition to the 3 flight controllers who come out for the mission.
Why do you have 2 stations fairly close together there in Australia? There's another one right next to it.
Yes, this station is at Woomera in Australia. It also has radar tracking facilities, which operate at a different frequency from this in the event that the equipment aboard the capsule, which responds to this radar, doesn't operate, then this one can operate and track. These stations in this particular part of the world are important because at this point, we're almost halfway around the world from the point where we inserted into orbit, and we get valuable tracking data with regard to the orbit characteristics by measuring the position at this point in the world.
And that was James Satterfield, the man in charge of the Mercury Tracking Station Network. A few minutes ago, we heard from the Glenn family home in Arlington, Virginia. And now we're going to hear from the home of Glenn's parents in Ohio. We'll switch to New Concord, Ohio, for a tape-recorded report by Hughes Rudd, recorded just after liftoff. And we'll switch now to New Concord, Hughes Rudd reporting.
There has never been that much excitement in the gymnasium of Muskingum College, John Glenn's alma mater, not even during a hot basketball playoff. Classes were dismissed 15 minutes before launch, and the stands were filled with screaming, shouting students when the John Glenn started his ride. At the home of his parents here at the edge of town, the word is that neither of them said anything when the rocket took off. The president of Muskingum was sitting with the Glenn seniors, and he says they just sat there watching the 3 television sets they have temporarily installed in their living room. Right now, they're following their son's path around the Earth on a special tracking map. This is CBS News, New Concord, Ohio.
Well, it's safe to say that there's never been a day like this in the history of New Concord. Great excitement in the hometown of astronaut John Glenn. We'll be back in a moment to Man in Orbit, this history-making event brought to you by Rambler. Right now, a word from Ed Herlihy.
For Rambler, the success story continues. Rambler sales for January show another impressive gain over last January's figures. With record sales already established for October, November, and December, the 62 Rambler is the most successful new car in Rambler history. Early this month, the 2 millionth Rambler rolled off the line at Rambler's Kenosha, Wisconsin plant, putting Rambler ahead of all other compact car makes in total production. As a result of record-breaking sales, your Rambler dealer is prepared to offer substantial dollar savings on any new Rambler you buy. This coming weekend, your Rambler dealer will be featuring a weekend special deal on new Rambler sedans, wagons, convertibles, sixes, and V8s. Come see the successful new Rambler. 102 ways new and better for 1962. Take advantage of important savings made possible by Rambler's sales success. Ask your Rambler dealer about his weekend special deal.
Once again, here's Dallas Townsend at Cape Canaveral.
And a fast switch to Colonel Shorty Powers.
Contact with this Friendship 7 spacecraft at 4:00 after the hour, that is 10:40. Astronaut John Glenn is now in voice contact with astronaut Gordon Cooper, who is the capsule communicator at Mouche. In the conversation, John has indicated, "I'm doing real well up here. All systems are go. I'm having no problems at all." He described his sight. He talked about cloud cover after he passed over the coast of Africa and crossed the Indian Ocean. He reported a high haze layer on the night side of the world. The voice communications are being recorded at this time. They will be broadcast shortly after we pass on beyond Mouche, Australia. This is Mercury Controlled.
Well, that was Colonel Powers giving us the latest excellent news on John Glenn. And now we're going to switch from CBS News headquarters at Cape Canaveral to the White House in Washington, George Herman reporting.
President Kennedy, who's been watching the flight of the Mercury capsule, has just moved from the mansion, the dwelling quarters here at the White House, over to his offices in the West Executive Wing. The President and Mrs. Kennedy rose around 7:15 this morning and, like thousands and millions of other Americans, turned on their television set, the one in the President's bedroom. They watched there until about 10 minutes to 9, and the President had to go downstairs for his regular Tuesday morning breakfast with his legislative leaders from the Congress. He watched on a small portable television set in the family dining room with the sound turned down so that at least they could see what was going on and know when they'd have to turn the sound up again. The Space Administration opened up a telephone line into the dining room about 15 minutes before blastoff, with Pierre Salinger holding down the line. And shortly after the blastoff, the President himself took the phone so that he could hear Mr. Glenn talking to ground. They held a telephone up to the loudspeaker and enabled the President to hear some of the conversation. The President stayed in the house, watching and listening until just a few moments ago. He told Pierre Salinger that he's very pleased about this first phase, that it's gone off so successfully, and he's going to be following it from time to time on a television set rigged in his office here in the West Executive part of the White House. There are appointments stacked up here waiting for the President. He's about an hour and a half behind on some of his appointments. But like everybody else in the White House and in the country, he's been extraordinarily anxious and eager, watching tensely to see how it would all come out. This is George Herman at the White House.
Well, things are moving hot and heavy right now. We're getting reports from many areas outside the White House. And, of course, it seems quite obvious that the normal life of the United States has come to a virtual halt as we watch the progress of Colonel Glenn.
The thing that we've seen thus far has only been experienced in the United States in the back end of aircraft. And the sickness is a good bit.
We were starting to play you a recording we had made a while ago about weightlessness as we got that report from George Herman at the White House. And let's go back to it now. We're going to hear from the doctor who is on the console in Mercury Control. And he's going to talk about weightlessness. These comments now from Dr. Stanley White.
The thing that we've seen thus far has only been experienced in the United States in the back end of aircraft. And the sickness is a good bit like you see in children who get car sick, the type of thing that you see when you are at sea and the sea is a little rougher, or your anxiety at least thinks it's rougher. This is the nearest thing we've been able to compare it to. And I think this is really the $64 question as to whether this is the same beast.
That was Dr. Stanley White talking about weightlessness, the question above all others which the space agency wants to answer in this flight of Colonel Glenn. And he will, as we said a moment ago, he will be weightless for 54 times as long as any other American has ever been if he goes full three orbits. And now here's the latest from Mercury Control and Colonel Shorty Powers.
This is Mercury Control. John Glenn and the Friendship 7 spacecraft is carrying on a conversation with astronaut Gordon Cooper at Mushe, Australia, as he passes over the Australian continent. He has reported that he has observed very bright lights, and from his discussion with Gordon Cooper, we have assumed that he is observing the city of Perth, Australia. His message to Gordon Cooper was, "Thank everybody for turning them on," meaning, of course, the lights. Our tracking station at Woomera, Australia, reports contact with the spacecraft at 43 minutes after the hour, 10:43 Eastern Standard Time. This is Mercury Control.
The reason that he was able to see the lights over Perth was that it's now darkness in Australia. He has passed from daylight into darkness as he continues on a 17,500-mile fast trip around the world. After he leaves Perth, he will be in contact with the tracking station at Woomera. In fact, he ought to be in contact with Woomera right about now. Right about now. Woomera is located on the southern coast of the Australian subcontinent, around the middle of Australia. And Woomera will pick up the spacecraft on radar. It will continue the voice communications and telemetering data. At the moment, everything is going beautifully, and Colonel Glenn has been off the Earth now for just about 1 hour. It was at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time that he lifted off from Pad 14. Right now, Pad 14 is very quiet. Its job has been successfully accomplished. After the astronaut leaves Woomera, he will soon be flying out over the Pacific Ocean. And the next contact will be with Canton Island, where there's a tracking station, and there will be range and voice communications between Canton and the Mercury Friendship 7 capsule. No word yet on whether he saw those flares from the Indian Ocean ship, but as Colonel Powers has reported, he did see the lights of Perth. The people of Perth, Australia, turned them on in order to make sure that Colonel Glenn knew that they were wishing him well. You might think that with all the other things he has to do and the probable tension, Glenn wouldn't have much time to think about food. But food is on board, and it's there for him to eat. Dr. William Douglas, the flight surgeon for the astronauts, explained to us what it includes.
We have provided him with several tubes of food. These are like large shaving cream tubes and metal tubes. They have an assortment of pureed meats, vegetables, soup. You have to put it there because he'll be in a weightless environment, and if he attempted to lift something with a spoon, for example, well, it would just float away from him. So he has to put the tube up to his mouth and just squeeze on it, and it squirts the food right in his mouth.
I have to get that. That was the flight surgeon, Dr. William Douglas, talking about the food. As we said a moment ago, one of the principal reasons for having Glenn eat while he's in orbit is not that he's going to be hungry. After all, he did have a very substantial breakfast this morning. This is a deliberate, well-planned, well-thought-out part of the whole experiment involved in the Mercury Atlas 6 mission, to find out, among other things, how an astronaut, how a man in space, while weightless, will be able to absorb and digest food. Well, it's turned into a beautiful morning here at Cape Canaveral. You could hardly ask for anything better. Warm, clear, just a trace of clouds off over the Atlantic. And the Cape has undoubtedly just passed through the most historic moment in its history. We'll be back in a moment with Man in Orbit, this event brought to you by Rambler. We'll hear now from Ed Herlihy.
Of all the innovations claimed by car makers this year, possibly the most important and the one car experts hail as the biggest news comes from Rambler. It is the new E-Stick transmission, available on all Rambler Americans for 1962. With Rambler's E-Stick transmission, there is no clutch pedal. You get what many car buyers have been requesting for years, most of the convenience of full automatic transmission for about one-third the usual cost. And with stick shift economy, the new E-Stick transmission, available only on Rambler American and no other compact. Another of the 102 ways Rambler is new and better for 1962. Another reason why Rambler sales are at an all-time high. This weekend, your Rambler dealer is able to offer you a weekend special deal. It is a special money-saving opportunity to own a new 1962 Rambler. Ask your Rambler dealer about his weekend special deal.
Now, here is Dallas Townsend at Cape Canaveral.
Exactly 1 minute, 1 hour, and 3 minutes ago, John Glenn left Cape Canaveral. And just about 58 minutes ago, he went into orbit in the vicinity of Bermuda, traveling at 17,545 miles an hour at an altitude varying from 100 to 160 miles above the Earth. Colonel Powers reports to us, in fact, we've had reports from Colonel Glenn himself in his own words, that he's feeling fine. He had no trouble with the force of gravity, which went up to 8G, eight times normal gravity, as he was approaching orbit. And he has now gone down to 0G, that is no gravity at all, a complete weightlessness as he travels around the Earth. In a few minutes now, he should be crossing over the east coast of the Australian subcontinent, perhaps not too far from the city of Brisbane, or rather Melbourne. And he will be passing out over the Pacific then, heading for Canton Island, which lies between Australia and Hawaii. At Canton, he will go into the monitoring range and the voice communications contact of the Canton Island tracking station. And after that, he will be heading for the general vicinity of the Hawaiian Islands, where there is a command station located at Kauai on one of the Hawaiian Island group. The function of Kauai is to, one of the functions is to make sure that the clock controlling the retro rockets is working properly, and if necessary, to reset that clock. Because between Canada, between Hawaii and the west coast of the North American continent, at the end of the third orbit, the decision will be made to bring him back. And everybody hopes that he will be able to go the full three orbits. And if he does, then Kauai will do nothing except to make sure that everything is going well on board the spacecraft. And now we're going to switch from CBS News headquarters for another report from Colonel Shorty Powers. Here he is at Mercury Control. Well, we're standing by now for the latest from Shorty Powers, who has been reporting intermittently from Mercury Control. We had word that he would be going ahead momentarily, but he may have been delayed just for a few moments. He should be giving us something more now from Australia, perhaps either Mouche or Woomera. Woomera, that... Here is Colonel Powers.
The Friendship 7 spacecraft with astronaut John Glenn at the controls has now passed east of the Australian continent. As he passed over Australia, he advised that he could not see the city of Woomera because he had a lot of clouds over the Australian continent. The Woomera tracking station has reported all aeromedical data received during the pass gives every indication that John Glenn is completely normal, and that includes his electrocardiogram, his respiration rate, and his blood pressure. Dr. Bill Douglas, the astronaut's flight surgeon, has just advised me that astronaut John Glenn has two tubes of specially prepared food aboard his spacecraft, one containing fruit and one containing meat. He also has malted milk tablets aboard. This is Mercury Control, the Friendship 7 spacecraft, now coming up in the Pacific Ocean, flying toward Hawaii. This is Mercury Control.
That was Colonel Powers giving us the latest on the orbital flight of John Glenn. And as we were saying a moment ago, Colonel Powers has now also reported that Glenn has food on board, two tubes, one of fruit, one of meat, and also some malted milk tablets. This is Dallas Thompson. We'll be back with our coverage of America's first orbital flight from Cape Canaveral in just a minute.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Mercury Control here at Cape Canaveral is now just beginning to play a tape of a recording that John Glenn made while he was over Australia with Capcom Cooper, and we'll join that tape right now. Here it is.
Fine up here. Everything is going very well.
Very good, John. You sound good.
Roger. Control fuel is 90-100. Oxygen is 75-100 amps, 22.
Control, having no problems at all. Control system operating fine, over. Roger, do you have any storm weather or landmark observations of yet, over?
Roger, I was just making some to the recorder. The only unusual thing I have noticed is a rather high, what would appear to be a haze layer, up some 7 or 8 degrees above the horizon on the night side. The stars I can see through it as they go down toward the real horizon. But it's a very visible single band layer pretty well up above the normal horizon, over.
Roger, very interesting.
This is Friendship 7. I had a lot of clouds over coming off of Africa. It has thinned out considerably now. And although I can't definitely see the ocean, there's a lot of moonlight here that does reflect off what clouds there are. Over.
Roger, you had an excellent cut-off, John. Your latitude is 8 feet second low, V over ZR 1.002. Can you confirm your retro sequence?
That was a portion of a tape recording made between John Glenn and astronaut L. Gordon Cooper at the tracking station in Mouché. Now let's go back to the tape.
Roger, go ahead. Roger, recall coming through now. Roger, shortly you may observe some lights down there. You want to take a check on them out to your right, over.
Roger, I'm all set to see if I can't get them in sight.
Roger. You do have your visor closed, I saw, over.
That is affirmative. I had it open for a little while. It's closed now. Cabin pressure is holding in good shape, over.
Roger. Recall is off. Our recall coming through now.
Roger. Any symptoms of vertigo or nausea at all, over?
Negative.
No symptoms whatsoever. I feel fine, over.
Good show.
Your 150 VA inverter is 180 degrees. Looks like it's doing pretty well.
Roger, looks like it's holding up fine.
Alright.
Our count is off.
Roger.
That was sure a short day.
I'm going to get friendship back.
That was about the shortest day I've ever run into.
Time passes rapidly, huh?
Okay, do you have any other landmark observation to make, over?
This is Friendship 7. I have a pair of these in sight out here, it's very clear. Picking up some of these star patterns now, a little better than I was just off of Africa. Understand your Pleiades in 85, over, and yet, over.
What we're listening to right now is a tape recording of a conversation between John Glenn and astronaut L. Gordon Cooper, who is the capsule communicator at the tracking station in Mouché, Australia. And you may have heard Glenn say that he had just gone through the shortest day in his life. It actually lasted about 45 minutes after he went into orbit.
Roger, stand by.
That seems to be about the end of that conversation between Glenn and astronaut Cooper as Glenn traveled over Australia. As Glenn crosses the Pacific between Hawaii and the West Coast, and he's now out over the Pacific, a decision has to be made whether to continue the flight for a second orbit. He's right now over Canton Island, located halfway approximately between Australia and the Hawaiian Islands. Now, the decision as to whether to continue the flight will be made shortly, and Chris Kraft, the flight director in Mercury Control, explained the making of that decision like this.
We have a set of ground rules which we use in determining the go or no-go conditions at the end of each one of these orbits. The environmental system, the fuel system, the attitude control system, the electrical system, the astronaut himself are performing within certain limits. We will make that decision during the first orbit. We will be watching trends. We will be taking the temperatures of various quantities. We'll be seeing how much of the fuel has been used. We'll see how much of the oxygen has been used. From these trends, we will be able to determine just how long it is safe to continue in orbit. We'll make that decision as he comes up on the West Coast We'll try to make it early. We can make it within 10 or 15 seconds if we have to on the West Coast.
That was Chris Kraft outlining the decision which he will very shortly be making in Mercury Control. We'll be back in a moment to Man in Orbit, this history-making event brought to you by Rambler. Right now, a word from Ed Herlihy.
Early this month, with the briefest of ceremonies, Rambler marked another major milestone. Early this month, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the 2 millionth Rambler rolled off the line and compact car history was made. 2 million Ramblers. That's why you see so many more Ramblers on the road, more than any other compact. Again in January, Rambler sales were up, continuing the record-breaking pace set by the 62 Rambler since its introduction in October. Month after month, Rambler popularity is growing because Rambler has more to offer. More quality, greater comfort, easier handling at America's lowest prices. And this weekend, your Rambler dealer is making it especially easy to own a Rambler. With sales at an all-time high, your Rambler dealer can offer a weekend special deal. For a limited time, you can enjoy extra Rambler savings. Ask your Rambler dealer about his weekend special deal.
Now back to Dallas Townsend at Cape Canaveral.